Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network. I drink it up.
All right, I got it.
Welcome to Bag Pod, everyone. We're here with Jimmy TV and Joe Doug.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
What's up, guys?
How you doing, Bags?
I'm fine. How are you guys doing over there?
Doing well.
Golden. I'm not eating a black jelly bean, that's for sure.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, that is the worst kind of jelly bean. What are you doing?
That's what I'm saying. I'm not. I'll tell you what I'm really doing is I'm looking around for the Keebler Elf ripoff of Samoas. They're called like coconut rings or something like that. I think maybe the dogs have gotten into them though. I don't see them anywhere. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I think maybe Cowboy polished off a box of coconut rings.
Well, I mean, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do, I suppose.
Yeah.
In any case, as you can see, this podcast is off to a fierce start. What we've got going on here, leading up to the debut of Season 2 of Game of Thrones on HBO, we've decided to do a little rewatching of Season 1. And we're going to, you know, recap a couple of the episodes every week until the premiere of Season 2 and, you know, just talk about it, how it compares with the book and that sort of stuff. And then we'll continue the TV discussion after that. But let's just hop into the Game of Thrones stuff right here. We watched the first two episodes. What do we want to do? Where do you want to start off, Jimmy TV? Why don't you kick us off here since you're the TV man?
Yeah, Jimmy TV, give it to us.
I mostly jotted down things that I thought were missing or vastly different than in the book.
All right.
The first thing was in the prologue. What actually happens in the book is the kind of shadier looking dude goes up into a tree to try to see where the wildlings are,
mm-hmm.
and catches a glimpse of another, starts to hear some noises, and then kind of the dickish leader of the little group gets just absolutely crushed by some
White Walkers.
Yeah, some of the White Walkers, and then he goes down the tree after he thinks it's safe, only to be confronted by the dude who just got his ass kicked, turned into a white, who then chokes him to death. And then the third guy, the veteran guy that was with him, is the one that's running from the wall that ends up getting beheaded, which is a little bit different.
In the show, it was the others chop off the second or the third dude's head, kind of.
Right. So the big thing that I kind of read into it was that HBO wanted to have a little bit more they didn't want to reveal the White Walkers too much. I mean, you still saw one behead the dude, but in the actual prologue, you see like six around a guy kind of harassing him. You know, it gives him a little bit more of a personality,
yeah.
Whereas in the show, they're kept a lot more in the dark. One other thing I noticed just randomly watching the first episode was when Ed goes to pull Ice out of its sheath right before he beheads him.
Uh-huh.
The sheath is like inside of a wolf's body.
I think that's just like Theon's cloak or whatever.
I don't know, because it looks like he pulls it straight out of his mouth.
Oh,
but
really?
Yes, you're right. It's probably just Theon's cloak. But yeah, for a second, it definitely looks like he just pulls a sword out of a wolf's body.
Yeah,
it looks badass. I'll tell you that much.
And exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. But then obviously the rest of his show is running around in like his belt and whatnot. So, but yeah.
All right, I've got two kind of before we even get into the episodes too much. All right, first off, why do you think HBO went with Game of Thrones instead of A Song of Ice and Fire?
Because that's long winded and doesn't sound that good.
It sounds pretty brutish.
All right, let me ask you this then: why would George R.R.R. Martin go with A Song of Ice and Fire instead of a sweet name like Game of Thrones?
I'd probably have to say because I mean, it might be some sort of literature callback to, like, Songs of Innocence and Experience or, you know, something like that.
Well, I think the basis of the book is actually more, I mean, the series is more along the lines of, I mean, we see a lot more of the cold, the fire stuff, and not, it's not really a Game of Thrones. I mean, there's a reason why I think the first book was called The Game of Thrones, but none of the rest were.
Right, and that was kind of what I was thinking too, is that the two names are kind of getting at two different things. There's like the Game of Thrones, which is like all the kind of the bickering, infighting that goes on in Westeros, mm-hmm. but then like A Song of Ice and Fire kind of is more of
the global problem kind of thing.
Right, kind of like the, you know, like the Others and White Walkers versus, you know, the normies, so to speak. So you got them as the ice, and then you've got the dragons, which, you know, have gone away, and they might be coming back. So then you got the fire coming from those. So it's kind of like two different things. And,
well, I mean, speaking in pure marketing terms, I mean, they're clearly marketing this towards, what, like 13 to 40-year-old dudes. If you're a 13 or 40-year-old dude, are you going to try to watch something called A Song of Ice and Fire, or would you rather watch something called Game of Thrones?
That's a good point.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I understand what you were saying about, I mean, the books definitely, at least as far as we've gotten. Joe, you haven't gotten any farther than I have, correct? You've just read the third one, too?
Correct, Amundo.
Okay, I was going to ask about that, too, because I was going to say something about the end of the third book, and I wanted to make sure that you guys were all the way up to date on that.
Yeah,
we are, but we make sure you give a spoiler alert for all of our podcast listeners.
I won't say what the actual spoiler alert is, just kind of allude to something's not as it seems. I'm just going to go ahead and say it now. In the first episode, they made it really seem like the first time we see Jaime and Cersei, they're talking over Jon Arryn's dead body, mm-hmm. and it makes it seem like
literally.
They obviously killed Jon Arryn. Like it really makes that connection,
yes.
kind of, which yeah. might not necessarily be the case, as we later learn.
well, spoiler alert, it's definitely not the case.
Nice, thank Joe. You, Joe. Nice.
I tried my hardest, and Joe just came in. Thanks,
Joe. Oh, Joe, dog. Jimmy TV is trying to give the listeners, you know, a nice little illusion, and Joe dog just rips it to pieces.
Because when I rewatched the first episode, it was the first time that I rewatched it after completing Storm of Swords. And when you watch it with that knowledge, it definitely, like, it reads both ways. Like, it reads, like, oh, you know, like, obviously, you know, that they don't know what's going on. You know, they don't, you know, explicitly say, oh, yeah, since we killed Jon Arryn, they're like, well, you know, what's going on, blah, 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 blah. So that, they did a really good job, because that book, that scene isn't in the book. And so the writers did a good job writing that scene and keeping it ambiguous.
Well, I feel as though the TV show, at least, because I haven't rewatched it yet either, just these first two. But from what I remember from the first season, I feel like they emphasize like the mystery behind who killed Bran and who killed Jon Arryn a little bit more than maybe the Game of Thrones book actually does.
Yeah, I guess the books don't really just dwell on those questions like the series comes off as, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the series definitely does, or the TV show definitely more with Bran as far as like the guy that comes in with the knife, which we'll get to, but it doesn't so much with Jon Arryn. Like, I feel like they try to like lay it, like they hint right off at the bat that oh, it was Cersei and Jaime that did it, when obviously, you know, it turns out to not be. Go ahead. Is it related to this? Because otherwise I got one more thing to talk about.
I was going to say it is going to be interesting to see if the TV series continues to try to make the Lannisters the bad guys when it's obviously a little bit more ambiguous than that, especially every other book that you read in the series. You know, they're really not clear-cut bad guys, you know, maybe one or two, but not so much as the show kind of makes it out to be.
I'd say throughout the second book, I'd say the Lannisters are bad guys aside from Tyrion. And I mean,
yeah,
even in the first series, even in the first season, like, Tyrion is clearly at least portrayed as not as bad or not as douchey, if you will, as the other Lannisters.
Right.
So. Yeah, I definitely agree with that, and also agree with you saying that it's pretty much through book two. But then as we I think we said on a previous pod, they're going to go into a little bit of Storm of Swords on this upcoming TV season. And with, you know, especially with Jaime, and I feel like with Jaime's thread is where in Storm of Swords is when he starts to kind of, you know, you see him and not as a, as an evil guy.
Yeah.
Not as much. Yeah. There were a few other big things in the first episode that they missed or changed. Some of them I thought could have helped. First, they didn't have Theon kick the dead dude's head after he got his head chopped off, mm-hmm. which he's supposed to do. And that. Again, I'm not sure if they're intentionally doing that now to maybe set up for Theon not being a complete a-hole later. You know, they're trying to let him be maybe a little bit more vague on that.
Make that a little more ambiguous, yeah.
Right. So, you know, we'll see how that works out, but I thought that was kind of at least mentionable. Let's see, there were a couple other things. Oh, the intro for Tyrion, I thought, was done pretty well with the whorehouse. The first time you see him in the book is when he has that talk with Jon Snow outside of the little dinner party thing they're having. Mm-hmm. Again, that scene was done great in the series when they got to it, but I thought having us seeing him before that was also good, especially seeing him interact with Jaime because they obviously have an actual relationship, whereas Tyrion and Cersei don't remotely.
Yeah.
And then the last thing. Before I get to that quote that I was alluding to pre-podcast, there was an Arya chapter that they completely missed, and I thought they actually like missed the one because I thought this one would have been good to have. It's when Tommen and Bran are sparring for a little bit, and then Joffrey and the Hound just start like calling out basically the Starks in the North for mm-hmm. being pussies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We also miss the scene where Joffrey spars with Rob, right?
I think that's part of it. I'm not sure if that happens in that scene or maybe a scene before that, and then they're talking about doing it again in that scene with actual weapons. But yeah, if they were trying to set up the Lannisters as being bad people, they definitely could have included that, especially with Joffrey.
Maybe they weren't trying to pile it on because you know soon enough you find out that he's a total a-hole in the second episode.
Yeah, he's true, completely true. Not. I wanted to go back to the Lannisters being the bad guys sort of thing. I was surprised, at least in these first two episodes, rewatching them, like how much almost. I mean, aside from when he pushes Bran off of the tower, but like Jaime doesn't seem like that bad of a guy really in the first two episodes. Like he seems cocky, and he seems like he can be kind of a dick, but he also seems like he's kind of a good guy too. Like what he says. It's not like what he says is like truthful stuff. It's not like he's just saying all this nonsense all the time, you know.
And that keeps happening. I mean, he always has an almost rational way of explaining things, you know. I mean, not pushing kids out of windows necessarily, but yeah, I mean, aside from that,
I mean, for the most part, he seems
aside from the whole pushing a kid out of a window.
Right. Yeah,
I definitely agree with that. And there's more of that in episode two that I wanted to talk about. But real quick, other stuff in episode one. First off, just right off the bat, is the title sequence, which is awesome, as everyone knows who's seen it. Two things that I wanted to note about the badass title sequence. One, the first thought that I didn't notice at all is next to the actor's name, it shows the sigil for the house that they're in. So, like, when it puts Sean Bean up there, it shows the direwolf, like, little logo next to him. I thought that was really cool.
Okay.
And then also on the sigil, or also on the map, they do the sigils. Just like when they show, like, King's Landing and, like, the gears start to turn, mm-hmm. it shows the stag of the House Baratheon. And, like, in Winterfell, it shows the direwolf. I didn't notice that before either. So that was really sweet. And then also, one thing that I'm very excited about being very interested in all the maps that come with the book, is that basically, you know, the title sequence is the map for the series. Like it shows you where stuff is and even the title sequence changes depending on the episode. Like in the first episode, it shows Pentos, across the Narrow Sea, but then in the second episode, it doesn't show Pentos, but it shows, Vice Dothrak or whatever it's called, the Dothraki city. So I'm looking forward to the new title sequence and hoping that we'll get some sweet, sweet flyover action on some new locations. What do you guys think about that, eh?
Well, we're obviously going to get Dragonstone right off the bat.
Yeah.
We'll be getting Dragonstone. We'll probably get Pike, right? Maybe not right off the bat, but when they get into the
eventually,
stuff.
Yeah, you would think so.
Yeah. And just in the whole kind of Riverlands area.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we should be getting an Harrenhal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Before we move off the title sequences, I actually had a question. What do we think this, because at the end, and at the beginning, they have, like, that flaming ball that's, like, encircled with the... Gold rings
rolling around, yeah.
Yeah, do we think that's supposed to be anything, or do we just think that's supposed to be something cool to look at?
Cool effect.
I'm going with cool effect.
Okay. Yeah, I was figuring that too, but I just wasn't sure considering, you know, I was thinking maybe it possibly could be like the meteor or the comet, I guess, yeah. But
I guess it could be the comet.
Could be the comet.
But, yeah, in any case.
Speaking of which, I guess we'll get to this in the trailers, but the comet looks pretty budget, the comet effect. we'll get to that in a second. All right, other stuff in episode one that I noticed is just a kind of a quick throwaway thing is Magister Illyrio's pad. I think that's the dude's name, right? The guy harboring the Targaryens. He's got some Unsullied as his guards. Like, they've got that dome piece, point coming up and whatnot. So I just thought that was, you know, cool that they threw in something that, you know, happens later in the book or later in the series. Another change, one that Jake didn't mention. Oh wait, maybe. No, it's in episode one. Is when Meister Lewin comes in to see Ned and Kat about the letter that they got from Lisa or whatever.
Oh yeah. In
the book, they're both stark naked after just having
ended.
Exactly, just having just slapped skins. And when Lewin comes in, you know, Kat just kind of gets up, you know, no problem, just kind of walking around totally bare ass naked. And Lewin's like, "Oh, do you want to put some clothes on?" And she's like, "Don't even worry about it. You see me naked, boy." And thankfully they didn't include that part into the series. And then
before you go on, I would just like to say there is a lot of random titty throughout the episode, so.
Yeah, but they keep it to the youngins.
Yes, they do. In any case, please continue. Joe Dog really bringing the analysis right now.
I'm correcting you to refer to him as Joe Dog.
And then another thing that I noticed for the first time in this rewatching is that they did a really awesome job with the exteriors of Winterfell, like when they're out, like in the on the King's Road, kind of coming into Winterfell, and you look back at the castle, it looks really cool. And also they throw the is it the heart tree? Is that what it's called? The one that has like the face? Is it called a heart tree?
Yeah,
they call it.
Yeah, weirwood.
And the godswood, yes, it's called a weirwood. I can't remember if it was called a heart tree. For some reason, heart tree stuck out of my head, but I've got no idea if I'm making that up or not.
No, I think you're right there. I mean, there's definitely one specific tree that's bigger and that they've carved the face in in their specific, godswood area.
But, like, on any, like, exterior shot, kind of establishing wide shot of Winterfell, you can see that
it's broken up.
Yeah, it's got the red leaves and stuff. So I thought that was really cool that they did that.
Yeah, no, the sets and the CGI looks good of Winterfell when it's from afar, and then the sets look really good as well. I just wrote down a couple of things here. I really miss, I mean, for I'm assuming the people that are watching this have probably seen season one, but if not, you probably should have stopped listening. In any case, I really miss Robert. He's awesome. He's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, he is awesome.
He's just talking about like banging bitches and getting drunk all the time, and he's just like this big fat guy that's always giving people guff. It's a good time. He's just a big time. I really miss him.
He is good.
What else do we have here?
And he's And he's not, well, he's not just, you know, a rabble-rousing, carousing big fat king, you know, because they've got the part where he goes down to pay his respects to his dead woman that he wanted to marry. They didn't get married, right?
Yeah, fiance.
And he even brought like some feather with him and put it like in the hands of the statue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's got a tender side. He's a conflicted man. He's a devastated man trying to deal with you know, the worst thing that could have happened to him.
And obviously he was a huge badass back in the day. Yeah. He just let himself go a little bit.
Yeah. And so Bags, actually, maybe we'll get some flashbacks, and you can get some more King Robert.
I hope so. I mean, I just know that he's awesome.
It'd be pretty sweet if we got to saw some Battle of the Trident or something like that. But seeing as how they're generally cutting down fighting scenes, I would assume we won't.
Yeah.
But well, it's a huge plot point in the series.
It is.
I mean, you never know.
They also have to cast Rhaegar at some
That's
point.
True. Yes, and Lyanna.
Yep.
Another thing I wanted to say is Danny's acting consists
not good.
It consists of a lot of blank stares right past the camera. She is always just looking right above the camera and just blankly staring into nowhere. Like when you first see her get all naked up in the bath, and then like she's just staring in front, and then
oh yes, Bagrid, yes, we just put it together. So I've been looking at this quote trying to figure out what it is, and you just made me remember it. I wrote down it's too hate my lady when it's too hot my lady. Her little servant wench comes by when she's going into the bath and says no, it's too hot my lady, and it just came off so corny and cheesy.
Yeah.
It was obviously just like, oh, you know, obviously she can take hot temperatures, but I mean, it was just so bad.
Just in case you can't tell, the fog means steam. Up in the back,
right,
we're gonna
right.
have someone yell. Also, right. definitely,
yeah, they definitely could have written that a little bit better.
No, yeah,
they
just could, don't have her do it. Like Batman said, there's steam there. Obviously, it's hot, you know, and you know, if we haven't figured it out now, we can figure it out in the 10th episode, for God's sake.
I mean, at the very least, you could have had an escape, like, test the water with her finger, in the beginning of the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, when the cow finally takes his prize, lots of staring off into nowhere as well from one Daenerys.
When the cow finally takes his prize?
Yes.
Yeah, expects. But even other than that, though, and there's some of this in episode two when she gets her groove back, when she learns how to make her man happy. There's some really horrible acting in that scene.
Oh yeah. I'd also have to say Jon Snow is a little underwhelming in the first couple episodes as well.
I mean, guys, these things don't change though. Neither I don't think either of those two or Sansa really ever get better.
I mean, I can't, like I said, I don't remember every minute detail, but for some odd reason, I feel like Jon Snow, maybe it's just because Jon Snow acts a little bit more of a badass, so his acting is a little better because he's good at being a badass. Because
he can get away with it a little bit more.
Yeah, but at the beginning,
yeah,
he's a little...
Yeah, he can get away with it a little bit, and even Sansa can a little bit, too, just because her character is so flat.
So, yeah, flat-flatty. The other thing about I think Jon Snow might have one of the bigger accents off camera, so he might have to work a little bit harder to try to sound normal.
Where is he from?
Not real Irish. He's pretty Irish, I think.
I think so.
I think Harrington's Irish or Scottish or something.
So he's putting all that mental fortitude in on sounding Westerosi.
Indeed.
Yes, exactly.
Instead of working on his acting.
One other thing that I wanted to say, I think they did a pretty good job with the wedding between Daenerys and Khal Drogo there, but I really tripped off one of the wedding gifts.
The snakes?
Yes.
The snakes, the bag of snakes.
The box of snakes. What kind of wedding gift is that?
That's
the worst gift ever.
Oh, Joe, I wish you had invited me to your wedding. I would have given you a box of snakes.
Yeah, oh my
Live
God.
Live snakes.
Yeah, and I like how the guy holds him up so he can take a look at your snakes.
Yeah, the good snake.
It's like, thanks, yeah, put him back in the box for me, bud, thanks.
Also, Khal Drogo is totally not into it until some fighting goes on, and then he gets like this little twinkle in his eye, and you're like,
yeah, he does.
He leans in a little bit, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's like, fuck a snake, I want to see someone get killed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I mean,
We got anything else on episode one?
Episode one, yeah.
No, I'm done for episode one. I honestly don't have much on episode two either. One thing. There was one major thing kind of left out, at least major-ish, that I picked up on. Sansa is supposed to go into, I think it's when they're either at a tent or at the castle, Dairy, or wherever it is where everything goes down. I guess it's in Dairy, House Dairy. Sansa's supposed to go in to do, I don't know what she was doing, but she goes in and she's supposed to see Renly and someone else, maybe Barristan. I think she sees Renly and Barristan who have come up to escort them down to King's Landing. And she's also supposed to see Sir Illyn, and she's supposed to be scared of Sir Illyn, kind of back into the Hound. The Hound gives her a little crap, and then she runs off. But then Joffrey goes and rescues her, quote-unquote. And this is her perspective.
Right.
She sees Joffrey rescuing her from those three people. Later, you know, goes and apologizes and whatever. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But during the chapter, she compares it to, you know, all these fantastical things. You know, I don't know what they are off the top of my head, and I didn't write them down.
Like the fairy tale-ish sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's like as major, you know, damsel in distress rescues in past.
Oh,
so like she's already you're just seeing this feeble-minded, you know, 11-year-old girl.
Well, I mean, after Joffrey gave her those doomy eyes so hard when he rode up the first time,
what? Yeah,
and during the feast, he really eyes her up.
Yeah.
Episode two, not a lot going on. Lots of Caitlin being a idiot and mourning, and I don't know.
You had to cut a little bit of slack. I mean, like her kid is probably dead.
I think they cut off a little bit of that too. I was trying to think of if they didn't or not, but the scene where Jon Snow is in there with Bran, I think this might go into him not being a very good actor. He's supposed to get really emotional when he leaves. Like, really, really emotional, like, when he's leaving Bran. But I don't think he ever really got there.
No, he certainly did not. I'm not sure if that was the actor blowing it, or if the writer's just like, look, we don't want to hit him too hard, too fast.
Well, I want to know what you guys, because clearly in the book it seems like forever, like, it actually seems like a good amount of time before Bran actually wakes up. Of course, Bran wakes up at the end of the episode. So it seems like there's a good amount of time that passes, and it seems like Caitlin is definitely, like, mourned for a while and stuff, but do you think it was a good idea, wise choice, to have Bran wake up at the end of this episode, or do you wish maybe it had gone into a little bit of the third episode?
I mean, it would have been nice to have kept it in the dark a little bit more, but honestly, it couldn't have drug out too much longer.
In
episode two, at one point, they say, like, either she says or Rob says, you know, that he's been in the bed for a month or something like that.
Yeah,
so a month has passed.
Yeah, they're in the Godswood, and she's like, yes, I've been at his bedside for a month. I have to get out or whatever. There's nothing more I can do.
Yeah, they went offline that one.
Exactly.
Two quick things involving the same thing that we're talking about. One is that Kat is making this ridiculous charm out of twigs.
It looks terrible. It looks terrible.
And actually,
she did not take the needlework lessons from the Septa, apparently.
No, Septa Morden needs to get on her about crafting. and maybe that was actually part of that to show the passage of time, because she starts off with this little straw man, and then by the end of it, before she leaves, she hangs up this preposterous seven-pointed wreath above Bran. They're symbolizing the new gods, I guess, or whatever. But it really looks like something out of the Blair Witch Project, and it looks
really high. Yeah, yeah.
But one thing that they added for the TV show that I thought was really, really good is the scene between Kat and the
Cersei.
Queen Cersei.
Yeah, coming in saying that they're a premature baby or whatever.
And it really nails two things. One, it explains like the past with Robert, because she's talking about how, you know, the firstborn son, you know, had dark hair, looked just like Robert, and but he died or whatever. So they kind of lay that groundwork that, you know, that they had this son, you know, a legitimate son. And then also it kind of gets the whole, you know, Kat and Cersei both dealing with the same thing, so it kind of links them up together. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was really good and really well done, and that wasn't in the book at all.
No, that was definitely a good ad.
Yeah, and especially since, I mean, every other scene, Cersei just being a huge bitch.
Yeah.
Well, I think it kind of needed to happen where Cersei, you actually see Cersei being kind of nice at least at one point or another.
Right. I mean, and in the book series, they certainly get into her going into the wedding, being really excited and really wanting, you know, to be with Robert, and then I don't think I'm giving away too spoiler alert maybe. And then the first time their wedding night or whatever, while they're slapping skin, he calls her Lyanna. So that's just
she didn't like that.
That was the end of that. Yeah. That was the end of the fairy tale honeymoon.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how their bedding ritual went. Getting back to episode two, and stuff going on at Winterfell. There was also a scene. I don't think it was in the book. It could have been, I can't remember, between Jaime and Jon Snow. And in Snow's at the
the forge.
Blacksmith guy getting needle ready to give to Arya. But Jaime's basically giving him shit about joining the Black and about how much it sucks, but, you know, not saying so much, but basically giving it to him straight. Like,
yeah.
And also talking about how, oh, it's just for life, so it's not a big deal or anything. You know, hope you have a good time, buddy. But
hey, chum.
Exactly. And it seems like he's just busting his balls or whatever and just playing the asshole. But, again, you know, having read through Storm of Swords, you know that he's, like, he's kind of hating being in the Kingsguard, which is a for-life position, and he can't leave and settle down with Cersei and have kids and stuff like that. So he clearly sees himself in Jon Snow, so I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. It also brings up a good point, too, because it seems like Jaime, he doesn't seem to respect people that haven't had any, like, battle experience as well, so I think that kind of brought that up as well a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say that I think they do the opening scene with Tyrion. The opening Tyrion scene is real good, where he wakes up in the kennel. I guess.
Yeah.
And he immediately slaps Joffrey.
There's an awesome YouTube video that's like 30 minutes long of just him slapping
Joffrey. Oh, I'm going to link it.
I sent you the one of him to Achilles' last, which is a 10.5-minute song, and him slapping Joffrey.
Yeah, that will be included in the post of this podcast.
Yeah, you definitely have to do that. One other thing that I noticed in episode two that was really cool is at the very end when they're kind of doling out the punishment they're trying to decide what the punishment is for Arya and Sansa and the wolf for attacking Joffrey or whatever. Queen Cersei is being, you know, just like the biggest bitch in the world, and she's striking this ridiculous pose where she's kind of leaning backwards and tilting her head back.
She's got the lean back pose.
She looks like something. You know when Army of Darkness, when like the badass creatures pop up and they kind of do this crazy lean back before they attack. She's kind of doing that lean back, like the lean, her whole body's leaning back, the head's tilting back. She's just being this, like, you know, queen bitch striking this ludicrous pose.
Comes on in the background.
I think she's always kind of like that, though. I think she's always kind of coiled up like that.
Maybe, but she's really working in this scene. Yeah. And then they cut over to Sansa and Arya. This is like right after they found out that Lady's going to get killed.
Yeah.
They cut over to Sansa and Arya, and Sansa's, you know, sitting there weeping.
Like a man to do.
But then you look at Arya, and she is fucking shooting daggers with her eyes at Queen Cersei, and it was just so awesome. And it sets up, you know, her keeping track of all the people that she wants to kill. And you can see it in her eyes. She's like, you know, she's putting them down on her list. You know what I'm saying?
Arya's definitely really going good. To be shitting in Cersei's cereal.
Nudes.
I think we were talking about some of the poor acting performances from the first two episodes. Clearly, I'd say Arya is probably one of the stronger ones, especially since she's so young. But I would have to say the Direwolf's performance Like, all of the direwolves are pretty good in this, too.
The pet handling's been really good.
Yes, the pet handling and the training has been quite good.
And, you know, unfortunately, I think that's all going by the wayside. I think they're all using CGI direwolves moving forward, considering they're supposed to be getting bigger and whatnot.
I was going to ask you guys that later on in the podcast series, what they're going to do with the direwolves. Because, like, dead direwolf in the first episode, and it's huge.
It's the size of a pony, almost.
One of the trailers, I think, that we're going to watch in a little bit, they have one of the direwolves kind of coming up to Jamie Lannister. Lannister.
Yeah, they do.
It doesn't look bad. It's kind of like the dragons, where it doesn't look bad necessarily, but it certainly doesn't look good by any stretch.
My last couple of things here about the episode, I've got two choice quotes that I plucked. We've got one where Robert and Ned are eating that like sumptuous feast off the King's Road. Robert mentions what he thinks is what it was Ned's
It's Jon Snow's mom.
Yes, Snow's mom with the big old tits, the great big tits, I believe he calls. And then Ned properly calls him out. He's like, no, that was Bessie. That was your bitch right there.
Yeah, I think you said the great big tits that you could just stick your face in or something like that. Exactly.
Yes, and then another real choice quote came later when Dany's being taught the ways of love, if you will, and her servant goes, Dothraki takes slaves like a hound takes a bitch.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, damn, that is awesome.
First off, the Blu-rays are being shipped tomorrow.
Yes, I will be getting mine tomorrow.
Indeed. So Joe's going to be missing that, but hopefully me and Bags are going to be hitting you guys with all kinds of back knowledge on all these things. But something that I saw, I think maybe mentioned in something or other, was that I can't remember if it was Bernhoff or DB, whatever the other guy's name is, but they talked about how they did originally make Daenerys and Viserys wear purple contacts, but apparently it just looked like atrocious and made their acting worse somehow. So they took away the purple contacts.
How could it make their acting worse? It's already so bad.
Yeah. But I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. No. But do we have anything else, or we want to talk about these sweet, sweet trailers, the newly released trailers from last week? All right, so the first trailer we've got here, this is the one that does not have the Florence and the Machine song underneath on YouTube. Well, it'll be on the post, so...
Yeah, there'll be a link.
It'll be the first Game of Thrones trailer on the post, but...
The HBO Go one.
Exactly. So we've got a couple interesting things going on here. First off, we're a little confused here as to who exactly Littlefinger is talking to.
Wait, before we get into that, the frost fangs look pretty awesome. Just Jon Snow looking out.
And as does the first part of music also. Makes it look seem a lot sweeter.
Then we get like the fire
dragon
on the beach
stuff.
Or whatever. Yep.
Yeah.
And then we get this random like fight that's going on.
It's obviously orchestrated. I mean, there's people standing around watching, and it looks like there's things like kind of set up around them. I mean, there's obviously people taking it in, not just look, two people are fighting and kind of staring at them.
Yeah. So we're thinking maybe that's like something like Joffrey's
King Day or whatever.
Yeah, his coronation.
Yeah.
So then we go right into this.
Littlefinger speech to a shivering woman that we can't place.
Shivering redheaded woman.
Yes, and Littlefinger is telling her that sometimes people with the most grace,
people with the most power have the least grace.
Yeah, that's the one.
Look at the lighting on this. I mean, like they're red. I mean, they're beet red. Their faces are.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I don't know if her hair is actually red, or maybe it's supposed to be brown, and maybe it's supposed to be Marjorie Tyrell. I don't know.
It's definitely not supposed to be Marjorie, because Marjorie's supposed to be young. She's like a young hottie.
True.
I mean, it might be one of the Tyrells or whatever, but it's definitely not Margie. Who would be all weepy and crying like that?
And we're thinking early in the season, too, right?
Yeah, because
he probably won't spoil anything late on. Yeah,
and Littlefinger would peace out at some point anyway. But I guess he could be talking to someone. Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see about that. I can't figure out who it is.
Maybe it's one of the whores.
That's what I'm saying. The whore that came down from
Roz.
Yeah, Roz. That came down.
I'm thinking
down
maybe it's one of that whorehouse that Tyrion goes to.
I was thinking about that too. Maybe the one where the person dies or whatever. Does that happen in the second book? I don't think it ever happens on screen, but like they definitely mention it.
Or it could just be one of his random scenes where he's like talking to some whore and he's kind of doing an internal monologue.
He's just talking to some whore.
Because he does that maybe we'll talk about that in the later pod, but like he's got that one scene where he's like telling two whores to kind of go at it with each other. Meanwhile, he's like making this whole speech.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right.
Anyway, all right.
But
so
yeah,
we're
so
not,
anyway,
not we sure who that is.
Right after Littlefinger tells us that the people with the most power have the least grace, we get a choice shot of Queen Cersei doing her thing.
Cocking her head to the side.
Drinking a little wine.
A little vino.
Yeah.
What's the next thing of note?
Hound is slashing someone in a battle of sorts.
We finally get to see Stannis.
Yeah, we get to see Stannis.
And the Red Lady.
Yeah.
Danny's not doing much. Yeah, there's Stannis and Melisandre there. Melisandre's little, like, head move is...
Her little head flick. The thing about that scene, I always thought was just. I thought that scene was just Stannis, Renly, and Catherine. Caitlin. In the book. I thought it was just those three. I did not think there were a bunch of people around.
I think there's always people around.
Well, I know, but for some reason, it always stuck out to me like it was just those. It was pretty much just two brothers kind of giving each other a little shit.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's true.
And then we get Rob with some eyeshadow.
Looking real good. Yeah, he's got that mascara on, looking real awesome.
And he goes at it with his new bow.
Yeah.
And then cut to the awesome comet effect.
Wait.
At the 47-second mark.
Yeah. Of Bran.
Mm-hmm. Bran runs.
Yeah, no, there's that sweet, sweet comet.
It looks like they just took like went into whatever. I mean, it looks like they Microsoft painted it.
It looks like they did a little kid pics work.
Yeah, yeah.
They're clearly superimposing pictures and things on it.
I mean, you know, with the thing with the spray paint where you like the spray paint can where if you just hold it down, it would eventually all circle in. It looks like they just started on one end, kind of went fast, and then kind of slowed down as they got towards the end, so they got like fuller and fuller.
Someone just Google image searched and pulled a little comet clip art.
Yeah.
What's the next major thing?
Little dragon. Little CGI dragon on Danny's shoulder.
Mm.
Kind of cool.
Very cool.
Then a boat on fire, obviously.
Yeah, it's at night, though. Wasn't the Battle of the Blackwater in the day?
And so far, all the scenes that we've seen that look to be from that era are all shot at night, which I thought was also interesting because I also thought that it was during the day. I'm not positive.
But then I also feel like maybe it started in like the early morning and then it shifted to the day by the time Renly's...
Maybe
they're looking to save some coin by shooting it, doing it at night. That way you don't
see... So they don't have to
turn
the background. Regardless, they're actually showing it, which is sweet.
Yeah.
The wildfire, what do they call that? It's not called wildfire, is it?
Yeah, wildfire, the green stuff.
Yeah, the wildfire is looking like a nice little glass jar of apt mouthwash.
And before that, you see Kjorn Halfhand with a frosted
to figure out who that was.
Chin beard.
Yeah, it's got to be Kjorn.
Yeah.
The Halfhand.
What is this... I mean, what is this city that these slaves are marching out of while Danny is yelling at them? What do we think that is?
Well, they're not unsullied because they don't have the dome pieces.
And I also don't think she's yelling at them during that scene. I think those are two separate scenes.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying in the trailer, they splice it together like she's yelling at something. And then you see these guys marching from this wall or whatever, and there's a... half-naked man that comes out, too. What do we think that is?
Maybe it's, like, the dude that she shacks up with for a while in Qarth. What's the dude's name? It's not Pyat Pri. It's like Zio Zanzini.
Zero like Zan Zaxos or something.
Zantos. Yeah,
maybe it's that dude.
Perhaps. My favorite shot, though, is definitely at the 118 mark where Melisandre's giving birth to a shadow.
Awesome Bagman.
Yeah, she's really acting it up right there.
And right before that, we get the flaming sword being pulled out of something.
Yeah, all of the battle scenes so far are at night, and we get we get that shot of the CGI direwolf there at 1:30.
And right before that we have the riot in the streets. Then also, I'm assuming that the scene with all the little boats is part of the big battle, just not with the main boat area.
Oh man, on the CGI direwolf, Jamie's eye line is way off.
Yeah.
He's looking way higher than the direwolf is.
Yeah, you're right. It does look like he is.
Maybe he just went to the Danny School of Acting for that one.
He's looking like Liam Neeson in Phantom Menace, trying to look at Watto, just not hitting it right.
I just noticed this here, playing this back. We get one shot of Theon here.
Yeah, well, I mean, Theon really doesn't have much to do in the second book. I mean, pretty much all he does is go to Pike, isn't it?
Yeah, and gets played like a bitch.
Yeah.
Gets
turned out.
Later in the season, but I'm not surprised they're not showing any of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Once he leaves the Iron Islands.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's just getting some water poured on him, it looks like, and then cut away from that.
Just a lot of quick scenes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We definitely see Marjorie Tyrell rolling around in a bed.
Is that who that is?
Marjorie?
Yeah. I'm almost positive. No, you know who it is? It's What's-Her-Face. It's Tyrion's girl.
Thought it was Shay.
Oh, yeah.
But it looks like Marjorie's getting naked
right before
then.
Yeah, Marjorie's
right before
in front of Renly.
Yeah.
It's nice to know that there's going to be some titty in this season as well.
Gotta be.
Alright, so, second Game of Thrones Season 2 trailer. This is the one with the Florence the Machine song. A lot of the footage is repeated from the previous trailer, but there is some new stuff, including some choice shots of the world above the wall we start off with, of course. I don't know, what's like the first main point here we got going on? What's the first thing that we want to...
Honestly, the first thing for me isn't until way at the, like, you know, other than, you know, we've already seen everything pretty much, and there's a few, you know, like, good glimpses, but the biggest thing for me isn't until damn near the end. I guess it's like when Tyrion's quote that starts at about the 120 mark, I think.
Well, I wanted to... Well, before that, then.
Yeah,
let me mention...
you go ahead first.
About the 42nd mark, I want to say? Is that where we are? No. Damn it, where is this? Well, we tried to figure out what this fight scene atop the bridge was, and I said that it looks like the Hound is beating someone. But you know, we still can't place that. But yeah, I think my first cool moment is where we get the shot of Rob at about like 52 second mark, and Jamie is saying how three victories don't make him a conqueror, and then Rob gets this little like smirk on his face, and he's like, it's better than three defeats.
Sucker.
Yeah.
I also really like the view of Arya all boyed out and looking all dirty and stuff pretty early on.
Variant,
like 21 second mark. Or later she's a little bit more cleaned up.
The first one's good though, definitely.
She definitely
looks like Ari.
Like she's got a lot on her mind too. So
yeah.
That's definitely a plus. And then right after this Rob scene, we see the Sansa defrocked scene
I looked it up as quickly as I could, and it's not when Dantos throws melon at her, which I'm pretty sure happens at some point.
Chucking melons.
But Tyrion does rolls in with Bronn and Timmons.
Just look at Joffrey's reaction to this. He's totally getting off on this. It's kind of creepy.
It's more than kind of.
Yeah.
All right.
And the reason why it's happening is because that's when they find out that Rob's won another battle. Really close to Casterly Rock at that point. Mm-hmm. So Joffrey's getting really upset.
He's getting his jollies on. Yeah.
And getting off on
forceful defrockage.
That's the battle when the direwolves go in and – or his direwolf goes in and really does it up.
Mm-hmm. But I really like Tyrion's quote beginning at about the 120 mark when he's basically threatening Cersei. He's like, listen, bitch, I'm going to hurt you. You're going to be smiling and then all your shit's going to turn to ashes. And it – And you'll know the debt is paid, and so it hints as to what's to come in book three, and it kind of sets up the indecision or the unknowing about exactly who's responsible for what's going on. Mm-hmm. It certainly sets up Tyrion to be the fall guy.
And we also get another choice shot of Cersei holding a glass of wine, looking real proud of herself.
one of the comments at the bottom is Cersei's troll face at. And it has the 128 mark. That's pretty funny.
And then the only other thing for me was just was Arya at the end saying, anyone can die, bitch.
Yeah, I think this is probably a better trailer than the first one.
And I'm also not sure when she says that. Or I'm not sure if she's ever said that during the book. Like, who is that directed at?
Maybe it's Jake and Hagar?
You think so?
I mean, she looks like she's pretty
alone.
Definitely that part. It's definitely like, yeah, when she's at Harrenhal. Maybe she's trying to tell Hot Pie that, like, we can get out of here.
Or, what's his face?
I mean, she's definitely very clean.
Ginger. Yeah, she's definitely clean, so that's what's making me think that it's got to be while she's at Harrenhal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what, I suppose, who she's talking to, but, I mean, that'd be weird if she's just talking to herself. But she does look like a complete badass when she says it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Arya's definitely going to be bringing it this season. And then we were trying to decide what's going on with this lone Winterfell rider looking over Winterfell.
And Batman, you're thinking it's Theon?
The thing is, the sigil on the flag definitely looks like a direwolf, but it doesn't look like the colors. Now, of course, maybe that's just the flag being soiled or whatever, but I don't know.
I think it's just an establishing shot at Winterfell.
In any case, definitely a more badass trailer than the first one, I would have to say. Definitely getting me hyped.
Very good, very good.
All right, so I think we've exhausted Game of Thrones for now. We will be, of course, talking about it next week and the weeks to come, recapping the first season.
I got a good transition for this.
Oh, well, now that you've ruined the transition by saying you've got a good one, go ahead.
as I was kind of alluding to earlier, there's a few production videos of Game of Thrones, which were all really good, and to kind of just harp on how awesome it is to be able to, you know, go into Belfast, which is where they record. I can't remember. They found another one of them is the city where they film King's Landing in, like, Croatia somewhere. And then the third one is in Iceland or Greenland or wherever the hell they do the Frostfang stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're saying how it's just awesome where they can just go somewhere and just get this great scope of what it's supposed to kind of look like and how that immediately kind of brings you into the series. And you know, Game of Thrones is much better for it. And one of my favorite shows of the past decade is Lost, and I think that's one of the reasons why the first two seasons especially are so good is that they're on the island. I think they shot in Hawaii somewhere.
Yeah.
And you really just, you know, you got no idea where the hell they are. But it's really sweet looking.
Yeah, I mean, definitely for Game of Thrones, I haven't watched Lost. I'm probably going to be chagrined for that. But yeah, definitely with Game of Thrones, a lot of the sets are very differing but very well done, so that definitely helps it. But yeah, what? So Lost is your favorite show, Jake, of the past 10 seasons?
Alright, well, in the past 12 days, I think I've watched something like 84 episodes, the first 84 episodes of Lost. So
yeah, Kara said you were doing some fan damage on the
Netflix. I looked it up to see when I started watching right before the podcast so I could give you these facts. So yeah, I've watched about 7 episodes a day, which is over 5 hours of Lost every day the past 12 days.
All right.
Obviously, most of the time I'm also doing something else. You know, I'm not solely paying attention. But
sure, Jake, sure.
But for 5 hours,
the past sure, Jimmy days, TV. This is your job, Jimmy TV, to rewatch and watch TV. I don't want a guy that's your multitasker.
This is how Jimmy TV do.
But I think talking with you guys about it, since neither of you have really watched Lost, it kind of loses a little bit, but I was going to try to make a case for why the third season of Lost is actually the best one and not the first two. But then after that is when things start to kind of noticeably decline.
Well, I don't
think anyone would disagree with me on that.
What I've heard is that the first two seasons of Lost, they didn't know what the fuck was going on.
Right.
And then they realized
that they had
like this great, awesome show that everyone loved. They're like, oh man, we really need to plan this out and see where we're going with this.
And I think the third season is the culmination of them still kind of holding on to that first two seasons before they get too into their own shit.
Okay.
The fourth season was the one that got split up from the writer's strike too. I think it was either the fourth or fifth one.
Yeah.
And that's actually I'm right at the end of the fourth season right now. And yeah, they just get all over the place too much. They're not on the island anymore. So that them, you know, in this kind of new world has lost its kind of appeal. Like it's not really there anymore. And you're not getting as much good story, as much good character development, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, when you're only on one island with a bunch of characters.
So what did you just scoff at?
600 pounds versus 170.
Oh, did you watch some of that?
I'm 4 minutes and 20 seconds into it. It's pretty remarkable.
In any case, I was only going to say, like, when you don't have all the multiple sets going on, like, if you put all these characters in one main setting, and the setting is, like, it's not like a city or anything, but it's just
something that forces
all they can really do is interact with each other, yeah. It really helps character development and really lets you – that's, like, the most exciting part of any show, really, is like learning the characters and like finding out which ones you like and which ones you don't.
I'm not sure where I saw this or read this, but I'm sure it was probably on Entertainment Weekly. They were saying that someone was saying that their favorite episode of Sopranos was the one where Tony and Meadow, I guess, are going on like college trips or whatever. But
oh yeah, that's a good
basically
one.
You just see them forced to deal with things and stuff like that, and you just obviously learn more about them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So Lost then. So you were okay. So what do you is Lost your favorite show then of the since 2000, I guess, in the past 12
years? I don't think I would ever say that so much. It's definitely one of the ones that is most worth watching. I don't think there's an episode where I could have watched that much of any TV show in that amount of time. So maybe not the best, but I would say certainly one of the most watchable. And at this point, I mean, this is especially the first 2-3 seasons, my third or fourth time viewing it. So there's certainly a good level of rewatchability in it. And I can tell you that in a lot of the backstory stuff, I noticed a lot more people showing up consistently than I did the first couple times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot more of the interweaving, that kind of things.
All right.
But then Joe here has this handy list of some of his favorite shows the past 10 or so years. And the only one that really raises my eyebrow, I guess, would be Eastbound and Down.
Let me give them to you. I got Freaks and Geeks, The Office, Deadwood, The Wire.
We're talking about the U.S. Office, I assume.
Yeah, I guess so. I watched a few episodes of the BBC one, and I couldn't understand what they were saying, so I kind of gave up on it. Freaks and Geeks, and this is in no particular order. Freaks and Geeks, The Office, Deadwood, The Wire, Sopranos, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Eastbound and Down, Mad Men, Daily Show, 6 Feet Under, and South Park.
Before we get into it too much, Joe, did you ever listen to like the South Park commentaries on the second season?
No.
Are you sure? Because I'm pretty sure you're the one who turned me on to this. Someone turned me on to this. Just Trey and Matt Stone just absolutely consistently trashed the second season of South Park. And it's really funny to hear them just completely talk about how terrible it is. But yeah,
they trash like the 60s or whatever too, because isn't most of the trashing because they're like making a movie?
Maybe, I'm not sure.
Because I feel like there's multiple commentaries that I've listened to where they're just like, God, what the fuck were we thinking, making a movie and doing a show at the same time? Clearly it's made the show suffer, blah, blah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Joe's top 10, there are definitely a couple of interesting picks there. I want to mention The Daily Show first.
Well, I was going to say, it seems like Joe gives us a wide selection of shows, a wide genre kind of selection of shows just to do that kind of thing. Is that true, Joe, or not? Do you consistently watch The Daily Show?
No, I definitely don't consistently watch The Daily Show, but it is consistently awesome. Like, whenever I watch it, I enjoy it, and it's thought-provoking, it's hilarious. The interviews are always good. John Stubeef is awesome. So, I mean, it's a great show.
Okay. It's definitely the only one that's not, like, episodic or anything. You know, it's actually kind of about real news, so it's not like...
It's awesome. It's awesome. Hands down, it's awesome. It deserves any awards that it wins. I don't know if it's won any Emmys or not, but it's sweet. It's consistently awesome. Eastbound and Down is definitely a stretch, but it's just, I mean, it's particularly the second season, but I mean, the characters are so brilliant.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and that's why in my write-up, and Jimmy TV's initial write-up, I think, are one of my first ones in reviewing this new season of Eastbound and Down. The shock of the first three episodes is just so good. It's just the characters are so unreal.
They're so unbelievable, and I was trying to think of how well comedies hold up, and like obviously, like, you know, Seinfeld was a great show in the 90s. I loved it, but it just doesn't hold up. And Curb Your Enthusiasm, I got a feeling, is going to be pretty similar to that. It's not going to hold up. Daily Show, obviously, like you're saying, is on every day, so you're not going to, you know, go back and watch, you know, the seventh season of The Daily Show or anything like that.
Yeah, there's season.
South Park, the creators have been clowning a little bit, so maybe, you know, hopefully it'll hold up, but you never really know. But I just have this funny feeling that Eastbound and Down is going to hold up just because these characters are just so off the wall, and I think they'll be relatable, you know, across time periods.
Well, I mean, their guest stars as well definitely help the fact.
Yeah.
So ridiculous. So.
Well, I mean, I don't think Will Ferrell's very good. I don't know if you include him as a guest star or not, but I mean, just the Kenny fucking Powers, obviously, and then Stevie, his buddy Stevie, is just so brilliant. Stevie Janowski is so fucking brilliant.
I think the first time we really see Stevie is it when he's yelling at his gym class to, like, not look at Kenny while he's pitching or whatever.
Yeah.
Because that scene just kills me every time I watch it. And like someone comes over and is like, Stevie, what are you doing with your band class out here?
And when they're in the car together and Kenny had been driving and like drunk driving and plowed into something and Stevie takes the fall for it. It's just so, and Stevie put together a video, you know, in the first season.
Oh God,
Kenny Powers
the
coming back. It's just so good. It's just so good.
I don't like Stevie. I mean, like, I think he's funny.
He's uncomfortable because he's so ridiculous.
He's so ridiculous, but he's really unbelievable as well. I feel like Stevie's like an integral character, but they should use less of him.
Well, that's what they went to in the second season. It wasn't as good back then.
Yeah, they need more Stevie.
I don't know. I can't stand him. He's just too much. He's too much for me. I need him in small doses.
And everything about Kenny Powers is hilarious. Like, you know, like whatever he drives, like he has that like preposterous like three wheeler that has like the two wheels on the front and the one wheel on the back. He's got the boogie board with the Confederate flag and a marijuana leaf on it. It's just so good.
All right.
Anything else with my selections?
Are you excited about Mad Men's return?
Oh, wait, I did not know that it was coming.
March 25th?
South Park actually is premiering
soon,
too.
No, it's not. March 25th?
Yeah, March 25th.
I didn't think they had shot another season yet.
Oh, yeah. They've been off for a year and a half. They better, like, hell have shot another season.
Well, because I thought there was, like, a contract dispute or something like that.
Well, I mean, there were some contract disputes, but the main reason that they didn't release anything last year was because AMC really wants it to win, like, Emmys or something, and when it's going up against Breaking Bad for some odd reason, it never wins any Emmys.
Breaking Bad sucks.
I know. I'd say, like, the first season and a half is pretty good, but then, like, they get kind of... They just rehash all the stuff.
Yeah. Bagman, do you have any additions for greatest TV shows of the past 10-ish years?
I mean, I really like Mad Men. I'm a huge Mad Men guy. When Mad Men gets back up, I think... I mean, you don't have cable, right, Joe?
I do, actually. Since the Blazers started back up again, we busted up with the cable package.
So will you be available for some Mad Men talk?
Definitely.
All right, so good. Well, we'll definitely be doing a little Mad Men talk like we'll be doing with Game of Thrones and, of course, how we've done with Walking Dead. So, and I think we might end up adding Eugene... our
nice
guy for some Mad Men.
Does he have a name?
Thrones, so. Does
Eugene.
He have a name? I don't think so. We might have to get him Sporty Gene or something. Might be nice.
But the Sporty Gene team.
Yeah, so we'll get him on for some Mad Men stuff. So I really like Mad Men. Clearly The Wire is really good. I didn't watch The Wire when it was on HBO, but I've since watched the DVDs. Big into that.
That's
fine. Have to say... The Office was good for season 2 and 3, but since then I don't think I've really been into it.
I think I'm obviously one of the rare people, but I actually really enjoyed this season of The Office, the Steve Carell-less Office episodes.
I haven't watched it since probably season 5-ish, so...
Yeah, I haven't watched it in a while either. Back in line, you guys, even though I said it was one of the best shows in the past 10 years.
But The Office... how do you feel about this Dwight spinoff show, Jake?
I mean, if it happens, I think that's going to be the thing to watch, not The Office.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Dwight's always been the lead funny character that people play off of the series.
Mm-hmm. I was also going to say, I think one of my favorite shows, probably maybe even my favorite show from the past 10 years, has got to be House on Fox.
Yikes.
I really like House. It's fallen on hard times lately, but, you know, that happens in the late...
You and my dad, Levin House.
Yeah, me and Doc Shrum, we need to get a little chat group going on. I don't know, I just think it's good. I think the characters and the acting is pretty good, and I don't know, I just really, really love some House. I don't know. That's all I wanted to say. Got to rep House a little bit. But, yeah, I think, that's going to do it, I think, for that.
Jimmy, right? D, you got any additions to the... TV shows?
No, I guess not.
I guess that does it then, Jimmy TV.
Yeah, Jimmy TV, not the silence on the TV matters.
I would need a little bit more time to think about it.
I debated putting Friday Night Lights on there, but I couldn't in good conscience do it just because it's such a preposterous soap opera show. But that's not to say I didn't enjoy watching it, but it's just not a great TV show.
It was definitely a young adult a soap opera. I also really enjoy Fringe, which I've talked about before.
Yes.
But none of you guys can back me up on it, so there's no real need to get into it. But I would say it is one of the top 10 shows that I've seen in the past decade.
I have to check that out then. In any case, Joe, I think you've got to peace out, right?
Joe Dog's out of here.
Yeah.
You guys keep up the good fight with this pod, and I'll chat with you guys in here a little bit later, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see you next week for some more Game of Thrones recap.
All right, later, guys.
All right, Jose.
All right, Jose. All
right, and before I leave for real and you guys continue with your pod, I saw that you're going to talk about Assassin's Creed 3, and I noticed that it's going to be on the Wii U, so I finally get to play in Assassin's Creed, assuming I get a Wii U. And then I felt like I wanted to say one other thing, but now I can't remember what it was.
All right.
Oh, Jake, I've been meaning to ask you for a while, because I know that you're into the Redwall series. Did you know that they made, like, some graphic novel versions of it?
Yeah, I own the Redwall one. I'm not sure if they've made another one since then, but yes, I own the Redwall one.
I just saw that we randomly have one, like, in Clay's nursery. I've got no idea where it came from, but I was just...
Maybe you stole it from here, because I'm not sure where my copy went.
Someone must have stolen it. All right, cool. All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, later, Joe.